This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Any guesses about what the number one issue for voters was on Super Tuesday?
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Hold on to those guesses while I give you the vote tally. Mitt Romney won Vermont, Massachusetts, Alaska, Idaho, Virginia, and just barely Ohio. Rick Santorum won Tennessee, Oklahoma, and North Dakota. And Newt Gingrich won his home state of Georgia. And in state after state, exit polls show the number one issue for voters was the economy. And it didn't take long for the candidates to note the economy in their speeches. For Mitt Romney, the first mention of the word economy came 3 minutes and 26 seconds in.
It's entrepreneurs like Norm Byrne who are going to get America's economy back on track if we can get the government out of the way.
For Rick Santorum, the first talk of economy was about debt, 6 minutes and 51 seconds into his speech.
They have systematically gone and grown the size and scale of government to beyond where it's was just unrecognizable.
Newt Gingrich mentioned Wall Street about 2 minutes and 40 seconds into his speech, and Ron Paul mentioned the national debt 1 minute and 5 seconds into his televised remarks. But while he was the fastest to address the economy, he didn't actually win any contests. A federal jury in Texas has convicted Alan Stanford of defrauding investors to the tune of $7 billion in a Ponzi scheme. Stanford could face life behind bars, and prosecutors say they may only be able to find $300 million to pay back investors. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
The high-living Texas financier was convicted of using fraud to inflate the value of his Stanford International Bank. The $7 billion fraud pales in comparison to Bernie Madoff's $50 billion-plus scheme, but it's still significant, says securities lawyer Tom Ajimi.
This is huge. Anytime you have a scam that's $1 billion-plus, that's just a tremendous amount of money. And don't forget here, he had at least 30,000 customers affected by this, in many cases lost all of their money.
University of Houston law professor Adam Gershowitz says even with this high-profile conviction, fraud investigators have their work cut out for them.
If you're a billionaire sort of cavorting in the Caribbean running an enormous Ponzi scheme, you're probably a little more scared today than you were last week. Your average white-collar criminal is much more difficult to detect, engaged in much lower-level fraud or manipulation.
Stanford's lawyers say he'll appeal. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in overseas trading this morning, down 0.6% in Tokyo, up 2/10% in London, 0.5%, 0.5% in Frankfurt, as the European debt crisis rests right now in the hands of private bondholders in Greece, who have until tomorrow to decide if they are willing to accept big losses. Here in this country, we'll get a first look at the job picture for the month of February this morning, when the payroll processing company ADP gives us its monthly report on private sector job growth. On Friday, the government will give us its monthly jobs report. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost 203 points, about 1.5%, to close at 12,759.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
One of the biggest items in any state budget is Medicaid, which pays for health care for the poor. States share that cost with the federal government. But in these tough economic times, some states are getting picky about what they pay for when it comes to Medicaid. And doctors who don't want to work for free are pushing back. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer looks at one place where this is happening: emergency rooms in Washington state.
Washington State is set to refuse payment for certain emergency room visits starting next month. It's come up with a list of about 500 ER diagnoses that hospitals won't be allowed to bill Medicaid for. It includes things like pregnancy tests, urinary tract infections, and other minor things that Medicaid patients go to an emergency room for instead of seeing their regular doctors. Maybe they don't have a primary care doc. These patients are in the ER so much they're nicknamed frequent flyers. Dr. Jeff Thompson is Washington State's chief medical officer.
It will be something that will be new and innovative, but we think we can do it.
For example, Washington State won't pay for minor sprains anymore.
I mean, if somebody breaks a ligament or breaks a bone, we'll pay for that.
But ER docs don't know if there's a ligament tear or broken bone without an expensive x-ray. And if it's not a bad sprain, the hospital will get stuck with the bill. And it's not like hospitals can turn anyone away. Nathan Schlicker is a doctor at St. Joseph Medical Center in Tacoma, Washington.
Well, remember that we can't legally keep anyone out of the ER. Once they ask for emergency care, we're required to see, screen, and stabilize them.
So far, Washington is the only state that's going to refuse to fund ER treatment for Medicaid patients with minor injuries. But other states are also watching the bottom line, because Medicaid is a joint federal-state effort, and the feds only pay for about half of the state's Medicaid costs on average. So states are slashing their Medicaid payments to doctors and hospitals. Alan Weil studies state health issues at the nonpartisan National Academy for State Health Policy.
And we are seeing state after state making sometimes 5%, sometimes 10% cuts in payment rates under the Medicaid program.
Weil says most states are still footing the bill for all Medicaid ER visits. They're slashing their payments, but they are still paying. Weil says they're watching Washington State's emergency room experiment closely. If it works, maybe they'll try it. In Washington, D.C., I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, to Seattle, where there's a controversy going on involving the woman who just won the Miss Seattle pageant. Apparently, back in December, she tweeted, quote, "Ugh, can't stand cold, rainy Seattle and the annoying people." Now she says she didn't mean it, though it might be tough to prove that because another tweet said, quote, "Ooh, I am seriously hating Seattle right now." In fairness to her, she used to be Miss Phoenix, where they do have slightly different weather. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.